From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. The Alaska House has passed a spending package to cover additional costs in the current year budget, including funding for Medicaid and firefighting. House Finance Committee Co-Chair Neil Foster says the bill reflects requests made by Governor Mike Dunleavy. Foster says the House did not add to those requests. The measure passed the House 35-2 today and next goes to the Senate. The package has moved quickly. The administration proposed an initial supplemental budget earlier this month and submitted amendments last week. Towns in southeast Alaska are suffering as a result of ferry chaos, increased freight costs, barren grocery store shelves, late mail. Another issue is sanitation. Claire Schrempel reports for Alaska's Energy Desk.
Not all rural communities have normal sanitation systems like city sewer and water treatment plants. They rely on septic systems that need to get pumped periodically. And while the Alaska Marine Highway is closed, pump trucks cannot get to some small towns that rely on them. Gustavus City Administrator Tom Williams said that if his home septic system gets too full, he may have to empty it himself. But neighbors with inaccessible underground systems don't have that option. That may mean they'll use other methods if there's no way to get a truck into town.
You know, the honey bucket process is one alternative.
Williams said if it comes to honey buckets, residents can empty them in the city's restrooms. But he's hoping state ferry service will resume so that septic trucks can come from Juneau to service the town again. Delays like this cause a backup.
When the truck comes over, there's a list of people who need to get pumped, and there's only limited capacity. So if, depending on the amount that are pumped out, if you're not high enough up on the list, you have to wait till next time.
Pumpers from Juneau usually visit Gustavus up to 18 times a year, but Gustavus has not had a ferry sailing since January.
The ferry system's the best way to get the trucks out there for these communities that don't have sewage treatment plants.
Trevor Richards is a co-owner of Juneau Septic Services. He sends pump trucks out to Gustavus and Pelican when the ferries run.
The only other option is to go with a landing craft, which tend to be $500 per hour, is the quote I've been given.
That's too expensive. He said the rate he would have to charge communities would be astronomical. A round trip on the ferry is only $800 total. And Richards said the landing craft are much smaller, so more weather dependent. Richards' trucks make only one yearly visit to Pelican to pump the municipal system. Pelican disposes of human waste in four underground settling tanks. If the tanks get too full, heavy waste, known as sludge, doesn't settle to the bottom. Trucks pumped about 10,000 gallons of sludge out of the tanks last May. But with no ferries on the winter schedule and no proposed ferries on the summer schedule, Pelican Mayor Walt Weller is starting to feel some urgency.
The tanks could overfill and back up, but generally the sludge just flows straight through across the top and goes right out the outfall pipe, which is what we do not want to happen.
The longer between pumps, the more septic pollution overflows into the Lisianski Inlet. That's Pelican's fishing grounds.
Who wants it in your garden? You know, I mean, this is where we get our food from.
Pelican can maintain its septic for about $10,000 a year this way. A decent price for a town of fewer than 200 people. But if the municipality contracts a barge, that cost triples. And Weller said a treatment system is an impossible expense at $250,000. Neither community has any scheduled sailings through May on the current schedule. AMHS proposed two biweekly sailings to Gustavus for the summer months. There are no proposed sailings to Pelican, but AMHS may schedule the Leconte to stop there twice before it heads to Prince William Sound. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Claire Strempel in Haines.
Federal officials in Alaska say a months-long investigation led to charges against 16 individuals and the confiscation of dozens of firearms. At a press conference in Anchorage today, U.S. Attorney Brian Schroeder stood in front of a conference table covered in handguns, hunting rifles, shotguns, and assault weapons.
To our memory, this is the largest seizure of firearms we've made in a federal operation here in Alaska.
Schroeder was flanked by representatives from federal, state, and local law enforcement. The investigations, led by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives Alaska Field Office, were monitoring mid-level gun and drug traffickers in Anchorage and the surrounding areas. A series of searches turned up illegal weapons, significant amounts of methamphetamine and heroin, and led to 10 federal indictments. But officials were keen to highlight the 82 guns confiscated in the operation. Though almost all of them were models that are legal for purchase, many were seized because they were found in possession of felons or were carried during the course of other alleged crimes like drug trafficking. Schroeder says the operation is evidence of the strong link between illegal drug sales and guns.
The firearms you see here today, recovered during the operation, were removed from the hands of criminals, making our neighborhoods safer. Why are we displaying them? Because we're committed to driving down violent crime, and these are a visual reminder of what our law enforcement partners do every day to keep us safe, removing weapons like these from dangerous criminals and preventing deadly drugs from spreading to our communities.
13 individuals charged with crimes have been arrested, while 3 remain at large. About a third of the guns recovered were stolen from Alaska residents. Officials will try to return as many as they can to their owners. The remainder of the weapons will be sent to a federal facility in West Virginia and destroyed. This summer, the Pacific Ocean was hit with the second marine heat wave of the decade, mirroring the first so-called blob of 2014. Scientists measured ocean temperatures more than 5 degrees above normal across millions of square miles stretching from Alaska to California. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Kavitha George reports that for now, it looks like it's subsiding.
The first blob decimated fisheries, caused a massive seabird die-off, and spurred toxic algal blooms up and down the coast. In the last year and a half, a second heat wave began brewing. But then it disappeared, at least for now. NOAA research scientist Nate Mantua says they're seeing surface ocean temperatures drop back to the 30-year average before the first blob.
Parts of the Bering Sea, the temperatures are a little below normal, which is nice to see for the first time for a few years. And most of the area around the Aleutians and the coastal waters in Alaska are back to about normal, normal being the average from 1981 to 2010.
But that's not to say that the troubling long-term warming trend that comes with climate change has slowed. Mantua says we may see short-term warm and cold periods, but the warming trend will continue.
It could go either way in the next few months, in the next year, but the longer term, you know, next few decades, you'd expect that that background warming is just going to continue to build up.
University of Washington oceanographer Nick Bond says it's important to note that the North Pacific never fully returned to normal temperatures after the first blob. The second blob just compounded the heat wave, warming waters at a greater depth and at higher temperatures than before. This winter brought cold northern winds and heavy storms to Alaska. Storms help to mix up ocean waters and release heat trapped below the surface. But Bond says deeper ocean layers are still hotter than normal.
This winter, there has been some cooling of those subsurface temperature anomalies, but they're still well above normal. And I think for some of us, there's just some concern that even if these storms keep up, they won't remove all that extra heat at depth.
Chris Holderide is a NOAA scientist who studies algal blooms in Kachemak Bay. She says it's hard to tease out what the effects of this most recent heat wave are and what's just a hangover from the first blob. It's not always easy to predict where toxic algal blooms will pop up, but recent rising ocean temperatures brought them to many parts of coastal Alaska, she says.
There were some areas that actually had fairly high blooms and more paralytic shellfish poisoning, and then some that didn't. And what we're finding up in the Bering and Chukchi Seas in the Arctic is that there's some very high levels of these cells that cause paralytic shellfish poisoning. And that, with the really warm temperatures that they had up there, is a big concern.
But with these somewhat colder waters, Holderide is hopeful that coastal ecosystems might start to bounce back.
We're going into this spring and summer with the waters actually getting cooled off a bit. And you can imagine that the near coastal waters, right, the shallower waters, can cool off faster because they're not as deep, right? There's not as much water to cool off. And so we're hopeful that for the near coastal ecosystems, that'll be an advantage. But it remains to be seen.
Monitoring over the next few months and fishery surveys this year will help give a clearer picture of the ecosystem impacts of the second blob. But right now, scientists say it's just too soon to know for certain. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Kavitha George.
Leaders at the University of Alaska Anchorage are proposing elimination or suspension of more than a dozen academic programs. UAA Chancellor Kathy Sandeen says the university needs to streamline in the face of significant state funding cuts.
None of us wants to do this, but this is a situation we're in.
The programs recommended for deletion include undergraduate degrees in theater, sociology, and environment and society. There's also master's degree programs in early childhood special education and creative writing. Sandine says university deans weighed student enrollment and workforce demand when deciding which programs should be cut.
If a program is eliminated, it doesn't mean that it was a bad program. It's just the situation we're in right now. Because of these dramatic, extensive budget cuts, we need to go to this extreme.
University of Alaska System is facing a $70 million funding cut over the next 3 years. And finally, Amazon opened its first cashierless supermarket, where shoppers can grab milk or eggs and walk out without waiting in line or ever opening their wallets. It's the latest sign that Amazon is serious about shaking up the $800 billion grocery industry. The new store opened yesterday in Seattle, Amazon's hometown. There, shoppers scan a smartphone app to enter the store. Cameras and sensors track what's taken off the shelves. Items are charged to an Amazon account after leaving. That is it for the KTOO News Update for Wednesday, February 26, 2020. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.